Folks, welcome back to the Mañana No Mas podcast. Today, it's an exciting day for me because it's a brother in the John Maxwell organization. As you guys know, if you've listened before, I'm a big fan of John Maxwell and part of the John Maxwell team. And our guest today is also a John Maxwell team member. If you would, folks, give Lawrence Henderson all your ears, all your attention. And Lawrence, without stealing too much limelight, I want to give you a chance to introduce yourself. Tell us a little bit about yourself, you know, how you came up, what you're doing, and just fill us in, man.
Kurt, I appreciate you letting me join you today. I'm excited to be on to share with folks around my niche in my world. And so I'm Lawrence Henderson, as he said, from the great state of Ohio. And IO. It's already going to be a great podcast. So IO, let's keep doing it, right? But in my world, I grew up, started my leadership journey in the United States Army. And after 12 and a half years of active duty, I was called to lay down my boots and hang them up and started this journey in the learning and development space, where now I am a organizational and leadership change consultant, trainer, coach, speaker. And what all that means is I help organizations and individuals put voice to values and lay and lead through their values and what that means to them in a very authentic way. I love the work. And again, it's steeped from my preacher dad and still in our family values, but through the Army and now my own values that, again, are a foundation for where I am today.
Nice. Nice. So when you talk about putting a voice to their values,
yeah,
that's a catchphrase. That's a catch line that goes after a logo somewhere, right?
Oh yeah.
So talk to me a little bit about what that looks like and how that manifests itself. Like, how do you discover their voice and how do you, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. So, so let's take for instance, the time that we're in now. For a lot of people who have been made to shut in, what's really important in their lives is really floating to the top, right? If they're valuing personal family time, if they're valuing just alone time, there are values associated with that type of need in their life. And for me, most organizations have pretty posters on the wall that have our core values, mission statements, and all these other things. But when the phone rings, the phone ringing and who's on the other end of it, it becomes more important than why you're doing what you're doing. And so when I say giving voice to values, it's allowing an organization to feel comfortable and courageous enough to put their posters into practice and get back to why they wrote them down in the first place and why it held a place to where it was important enough to put out there. And so you've probably seen this one before, where an organization will onboard you, they'll give you a book, they'll give you a pamphlet, and they say, this is what we stand for. And then 2 weeks later, they put baby in the corner and told you to sit there, shut up and color, and we'll come get you when we're ready for you. And most people, they disconnect. And what I'm helping organizations understand is, if you find out what's important to me, and you, I believe you took that time in an interview process, and you lead me through that process from there, I not only say yes to you, you say yes to me, but because we're speaking the same language. And so I help organizations connect to the foundational place that they need to launch from. And I believe from there, you actually begin to interact and help the retention issues that are occurring in most organizations.
Yeah, that is good stuff. And I like the way that you say, you know, there's banners and posters on the wall, mm-hmm. you know, but seeing it in practice is a different thing.
Yeah.
On a very personal note, mm-hmm. I once worked for a kind of an exclusive international brand.
Yeah.
And I got the reputation as being a change agent, right? Somebody mm-hmm. that goes, okay, you know, this might be what you've done for the last three decades, but mm-hmm. if we go A, B, and C, we might accelerate the growth or accelerate mm-hmm. the learning, because learning is kind of my space.
Mm-hmm.
And so another international well-known company recruited me. And during the interview process, they said, man, we know you're a change agent and we see what you've done for the other company. And we want you to come on board and do that for us. And then, so you say, yes, you're all excited. You know, in my case, I said, yes, I'm all excited. And I moved my family 500 miles. And as soon as I walked in the door, I mean, it was immediate. I was like, wow. Everything they said in the interview isn't the culture here. So then I had to say, okay, am I that change agent and can I affect change through multiple levels of management with 360 degree leadership skills? Mm-hmm. Or am I going to be baby in a corner with my coloring book and crayons like you described?
Mm-hmm.
And I'll tell you, man, it was a battle. I mean, the whole first year was a battle. And then finally it was like, we'll let you do this. And then ding, success. Okay, we'll let you do this. Ding, success. And then and then I was frustrated because I thought things were going too slow. But people that had been in that culture for a long time were like, oh my God, you're turning the whole place upside down.
It's rapid change. Yeah. And it's hard to monitor. Oh my gosh. And so to that point, right? It becomes, well, why did they bring you on in the first place? Right. And it becomes that fight. When I talk about voice to values, it really chips at, was this only aspirational? And you wanted to do it in your time. We wanted to say that at dinner parties. We wanted to say it at networking events. That's what we're about. But we want to slow roll it because we feel like it's painful. We feel like it's a massive identity change. Like, no, but you wrote it down and you said that's who you were. And I think that fear, again, the false evidence appearing real, but it needs to be the forget everything and rise side of fear, right? Of, hey, we brought Kurt in for this reason, right? We understand his value. And I think that's a kind of, you know, you pull the rug from under people when they say yes to you or you say all the right things in an interview, you get up for it, and then they show you a different side of the organization once you're in. And I think that's the part where trust begins to erode, when the language in interview is not the language in reality. And I think that's the fight that happens on a daily basis with people.
So if I can I be more functional with you? Can we talk about process?
Let's do it.
Let's, you know, somehow, some way, by hook or by crook, you find yourself inside a corporate wall, right?
Yeah.
And you're going, okay, I would imagine the pressure on you is pretty immense because you got to figure out, you know, who's paying me? Like, who hired me?
Yep.
Who in the room is the decision maker, right? Mm-hmm. And then you got to figure out, okay, so what are the goals? Like, am I helping the employees? Am I helping HR? Am I helping the vice president in the corner? I picture your involvement at a corporate level being kind of multi-layered. What's that look like for you?
So for me, the only way I actually come into the room is if the person with the bag or the bank book is in the room. And that's the only way I come in, because if we just going to have general conversations around some nice to haves and some ideas of what I could potentially bring, that happens in a 15 to 30 minute phone call. I'm not coming to your organization because, again, that's me getting on the phone, get on a plane or whatever, driving to wherever you are. Let's do an exploratory call, because when I come in and I sit down with people, that means decision makers have already been briefed. They're already anxious. They're already hedging when I come in. And the first thing that I ask with those people in the room is, how invested in this shifting reality are you?
Yeah. Yeah. And then, again, more of a functional question.
Yeah.
How do you perform a needs assessment? How do you get information because I'll tell you just from my experience.
Yeah.
I work in the power sports field. So I have, they might own multiple dealerships. So now you got presidents and vice presidents. But if it's a single dealership, you've got an owner, right?
Yeah.
And so that owner might have a certain perspective about the condition of a store.
For sure.
But then once I get inside the building, I go, whoa, his interpretation of the condition of his store is incorrect, because these people down here they're not at this level yet.
Yeah. And so it goes to that point, right? And the functional parts of it is, you know, first finding out what's already been done, right? So the last thing any good consultant or anybody wants to do is rework. And so once you find out who's been there before you, whether it was another John Maxwell person, so you can follow up and this is just enhancement on what somebody laid down for you, or if they have never had anybody like me or you in the building. And so what's the appetite for this type of content? Have you introduced this type of content yourself? And how has it been rolled out to employees? And I recall reading a book, The Gifts of Imperfection by Brené Brown. And she talks about, she did a speaking engagement at a school. Well, the principal and the PTA president didn't let her know that they told everybody in the room that they had to be there and that she was going to get them straight. Well, they didn't relay that to her. And so she walked into a hostile environment, right? And so for me, I need to know if I'm going to walk into a hostile environment. Why do people believe I'm here, right? And because, again, the last thing people want and the last thing you want to be up against are people who are, you're not going to change me, right? That mentality, whether that's the VP, whether that's the CEO, again, whoever called you, you need to help, they need to help you understand what you're walking into. And so if you're talking about from that very functional level, like, what am I walking into? And are people aware of what I'm here to do, right? And then we go from there.
Yeah. And then you got to start putting the whole voice to values thing,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, start chipping away. That's the easy part, right? Because that's programming. That's pulling out, becoming a person of influence, or, you know, everyone communicates, few connect, right? And beginning to pull out the modalities and the things that will work, and then modular, you know, put them in place to where it's bite-sized, right? It's palatable, because, again, you eat an elephant one bite at a time. The last thing you want to do with people who have never been introduced to development work, because that's really what this is. This is not just education. This is not just training. If you're going to take on this journey of rearranging language or anything like that, this is a development sustainability project. And yeah. So everyone needs to be on board. And this is not going to happen in a day. This is a marathon, not a sprint type of environment. And so as long as everybody, again, it may be uncomfortable, but I paint myself as a partner and not the person that's going to just get you straight along the way. Because I want to be alongside you. And like leadership is, you pace out a little bit and then you let them catch up. Then you pace out a little bit more and then you let them catch up. And so in that way, again, they know you're in it with them. And I go back to my infantry platoon leader days where I got dirty first. And so I modeled it and then began to let them sit on the right side of it and begin to practice and get their reps themselves.
Yeah. Now, with the Army background, mm-hmm. and what you're doing now, mm-hmm. you find that sometimes there's internal conflicts for you mentally, because, you know, in the military, I'm not a military person. So mm-hmm. disclaimer up front, right? I didn't go. But my interpretation, you know, what I see in movies and interviews and talking to people mm-hmm. is, you know, someone says, so you do. Someone says, you do. It's like mm-hmm. the line of command thing.
Yep.
And then you get into a corporate world and you say, this is what we're going to do. And people are like, hey, I really don't know if I want to do that or not.
Yeah.
It's, I would imagine internally, you got to regulate yourself.
Yeah. And even though, again, that's the movies and everybody else on the military side, you know, there was a transition and a shift in even the way service was, you know, we got introduced to stress cards and, you know, that's hard today. So I'm going to take a backseat to that today. So we had to experience a little bit of that shift in culture as well, but there still was a chain of command and there was directives, there was orders. And unless it was, you know, violations of legal, moral, or ethical, all right, you're not questioning what I just told you to do. Yeah. And I think early on, year one is where I really had to fight that in my head. Because in the back of my mind, I was like, we just got instructed to do something. And it's not. And again, that's my barometer, legal, moral, ethical. Like that, literally, if it doesn't violate those three, then why are we saying no? Right. And that's my barometer. And so what happened for me is I had to begin to do a lot of self-work because I was intense, my wife would say. And she was like, you need to power down, buddy. Like, you need to tell Major Henderson, come back. I recall being at church. I was an usher, man. So imagine being intense as a volunteer at church, like giving people hand signals and telling them which seat to go to. Like, it was just crazy. But I powered down, and it was that self-work and that self-leadership work. And I would really say getting into, you know, the Goleman work of emotional intelligence and really beginning to understand what it means to have self-awareness, to have self-management, that social awareness, and then really build on relationship management, which is really what we're working through now and what we're discussing. And once I started doing that work on myself, and I always tell people, I'm my first client. everything I'm telling you and coaching you about, I tried it on me first, because if it don't work on me, I'm not going to present it to you, because I'm still working through some things with my coach, right? And so it was a lot of self-leadership work that I began to do on myself because of my experiences, right? And again, they set the foundation for who I am today, and I am so eternally grateful for them. But every now and again, Major Henderson jump up and say, be accountable, own it. And again, it's still going to come up. Be accountable and own it. But yeah, the command hand is actually going to get holstered. And then I must speak with a little bit more empathy.
Well, you know, it sounds like you and I have a lot of similarities in that regard. Mm-hmm. I was raised in Philadelphia. Okay. And so I remember the culture shock of moving from Philadelphia to Colorado. Yeah. And people would say to me, they would say, A, you drink a lot of coffee and you drink it strong. And then the next thing was, why do you talk so fast? You know, try to slow down. Yeah. And I remember how frustrated I would be, mm-hmm. you know, because of that, you know, so that whole, I could picture your wife saying, hey, you know, you got to calm yeah. down, you know, Major Henderson's got to take a break. Mm-hmm. You know, and then I went from Colorado to New Mexico, and then I went from New Mexico to California. And it, each step along the way, you know, it's a little bit more of a culture change, culture shift, mm-hmm. you know, and you just got to kind of adjust. Now, you mentioned emotional intelligence. Mm-hmm. You mentioned, you know, you mentioned John Maxwell. You mentioned yeah. coaching yourself first, being your first yeah. client. Yeah. Talk to me about what lured you to the John Maxwell channel. Like what yeah. got you going in that direction?
So my first John Maxwell book was the John Maxwell Leadership Bible back in 2003. And it was right before I was actually in my first Army school as a young infantry lieutenant down at Fort Benning, Georgia. And I picked it up in a church library. And in that Bible had, you know, the 15 invaluable laws of growth. It had 21 irrefutable laws of leadership. It had, and so that sparked me to just buy the series of books that he had out at the time. And literally, as a young company commander, I bought the 21 irrefutable laws VHS box set. And I used the box set as leadership training for my leaders when I was a company commander. And we went through the 21 VHS and sat together, and I mean it was crazy, and they were like, "So the best training we've ever had, sir." And I was like, I'm got as many notes as y'all do. But once I transitioned out back in 2015, I saw that the certification, it was crazy enough, Facebook. It was an ad on Facebook, and when I seen it, I called my brother. I remember the day, like I called my brother. Like December 2015 was like, hey, do you know John Maxwell had a certification? And he was like, you're late. I was like, what do you mean? I'm like, it's been out for years. I'm like, I just got out the Army. I've been kind of sheltered for a little while. So it's all good. But once I found that out, I went that spring, March 2016 is when I went to Orlando for the 3-day intensive. And loved every minute of it. I'm just absorbing that content. And again, I've used that work over the years in a number of ways to supplement trainings and just the qualities and the values and understanding what his background is. And crazy enough, I'm on the board of one of his previous assistant pastors, Dr. Tim Elmore, here in Georgia. And so it's just full circle of how everything comes around with that program. So I just absolutely love it.
Well, I will tell you that in my personal experience, the level of grounding I've gotten from the material, mm-hmm. and it's so weird because when you take this type of training, you go, I knew that. I'm not learning nothing new. I knew that.
Yeah.
But it's the delivery. It's the enclosure. It's the yeah. package, you know? And then yep. I plan to be independently employed in 2016. So I also did my IMC. I did it August that year.
Okay.
And so you and I are about the same yeah. evolution time there. But then, as I described earlier, I got recruited by another corporation and I said, mm-hmm. well, you know, it's a paycheck and the benefits are good and let's go. And so when I went to my IMC, I knew that I was going to use it corporately. And that changed my mindset about going through the program a little bit. Mm-hmm. And it was really interesting to go into a large corporation that wasn't using that skill set and then start to implement some of those things. Yeah. And other managers around me were like, why do you do it that way? Why are you doing this? And why are you doing that? And why do you do, you know, why do you hold these meetings with your people? Why do you, you know? Mm-hmm. And I said, well, this is what I do, you know? And that was the first job I ever left where employees wrote me recommendations on my LinkedIn.
Nice.
Like it's like it totally turned. Yeah. It was turning a whole other avenue to life open. Yeah. You know? So it's been an invaluable training. I've really enjoyed it.
Yeah. And I would say even from, because of when I got exposed to it, you talk about getting exposed to that type of material and content as a, you know, 24-year-old, and using it throughout my 12 and a half years of leading people, in, you know, Department of Defense, military, and just diving into getting true with myself and really having a foundation. And once I transitioned out and once I launched into this world of training and development, because again, not the world I started in once I transitioned out. So I actually got the certification before I had my first full-time job. It was kind of simultaneous, where I didn't immediately use this content, but here in Georgia, I ran into a bunch of JMTers.
Yeah, there are a bunch out there.
Yeah. And so again, 12 Stones churches here and a bunch of other things. And so was running into them in Toastmaster groups. I was running into them all over the place. But it helped me get clear on the direction I wanted to be in by being a part of that. And it was like, you know what? I'm not going to waste this. Like, I'm not going to waste this opportunity of connection, of growth. And again, it's solid material. It's a solid foundation. And guess what? It's, you know, the name recognition of being a solid certification as well. So it worked out.
Like you, my wife and I, we mentor a group of young adults through our church.
Nice.
And we've done a couple of sessions on the Maxwell material and just laid it out. And right when you think, you know, these Gen Z, these Zoomers, they're not going to be into this. They're into, you know, they want to do Facebook. No, they don't want to do that. They want to do Snapchat and Instagram and all these things. And here's what shocked me, Lawrence. I said, hey, there's 12 chapters in this book. You want you guys pick two or three chapters and we'll run through it. I'm certified to teach this. And these kids, because, you know, they're adults, but they're kids, right?
Yeah.
They said, well, but you're certified in all of it. So why won't you teach us all of it? Why do we have to pick three or four? And I'm like, I didn't think you'd have the attention span to go through a whole book. Mm-hmm. Right. Dude, they were glued and they started bringing their friends to it. Like, you got to come hear what this guy's talking about, you know? And it was like, wow, this is so us older folks. And I know that you're younger than me, but us older folks, we're looking at these younger generations thinking that our content's not valuable or that they don't want it or that they don't have the patience for it. Yeah. And they do. If you hit them with something that has value, they'll plug in and stay. And I was amazed. And so now we're continuing to work with this group and now we're doing a thing on goal setting and, awesome. You know, future casting and stuff like that. Yeah. So it's kind of fun.
Yeah.
I was just going to say, I'm looking at the clock. I want to honor your time. You've been gracious enough to join the show. Tell the audience, how does someone look at their own environment and know that Lawrence Henderson is someone they need to call? Like what's your target client?
Got it. So the perfect client for me is the client who you've identified that you need some level of support and you don't know if your culture is shifting and you find yourselves working hard and you can't figure out what you're created because you're working hard and you just wanting to get refocused. Those are the people that I want to work with and get clear around what's leading you and what's serving you on a daily basis, whether that's mentally, spiritually, or emotionally. And let's do work. That's my perfect client.
Let's do work. Someone's going to get their hands dirty and actually do what you talk about.
Exactly.
Right. That's exactly. The taking action part is hard. That's where the Mañana Namás name came from. It was, you got to do this today. Like there's no tomorrow. Like this is your business.
For sure.
You got to take action now, you know, and I got angry one day, and a director in a building that I was at said, that'd be a good name for a business.
There you go.
I changed it the next day. How can, let's say someone's listening to this and they're saying, well, I that is us. We do have a culture shift. We do, we do need to get clear. Yeah. How would you prefer people to reach out to you?
Yeah, you can reach out to me. I'm on LinkedIn. Lawrence E. Henderson Jr. Is the full government name that I have listed on LinkedIn. But if you find me on Instagram, Facebook, you can find me at Boss Lab, which is B-O-S-S-L-L-A-B. Or you can send me a direct email, Lawrence, L-A-W-R-E-N-C-E, at bossconsultingllc.net.
Boss Consulting? Bear with me because I do write down some notes sometimes.
Got you.
Bossconsulting.net.
LLC.net.
LLC.net. See, that's a good thing I write things down. All right. And Lawrence, man, I just got to tell you, it's, you know, I know that when you say, hey, I'll be on your podcast or I'll spend some time with you or whatever, there's always a thing in the back, right? Like, oh, I sure hope this works. I hope this isn't a waste. And this has not been a waste, man. It's been a pleasure getting to know you a little bit better. And, I'll be honest, man, this might be worthy of a version 2 6 months or a year down the road. I'm interested to see where this grows. Before we close out, would you say that the COVID crisis has brought more awareness to your services, or like, how do you see this thing shaping out? Like, we're in the middle of the COVID crisis, right? So, so for association's sake, we'll let people know that we're recording this right now, six or 8 weeks into the COVID crisis, depending on what state you live in. So how do you see this affecting what you do for a living moving forward?
I believe this is going to highlight the importance of development for organizations and really getting clear and very granular on what they believe in. Because again, I say in this time, what's important has been floating to the top. And so if you really want to be an organization known for leading with empathy or anything like that, this time that we're in is really filtering some folks out.
Yeah. No, I have to agree with you. It's when this all started for my niche, I forecasted growth. And a lot of people said I was nuts. I wrote a blog post. I put it up public. I was willing to be wrong. Yeah. But I said, hey, you know, they're saying social distancing is the thing. You know, for years, motorcycling wasn't the thing. It came with guilt. Like, if you're a married guy with kids and you buy a motorcycle and you're going to go ride by yourself, that's bad, right? And that's kind of what this whole UTV growth and boating growth has kind of stemmed from. And RVs, you know, families started buying RVs. But then the government came along and said, oh, no, social distancing's a thing. Bicycle, motorcycle, whatever. And I said, oh, they just gave – because this never got boring, right?
Yeah.
That's right, never got boring.
Exactly.
So I was like, well, now you've given guys permission to go motorcycling again. And I said, we're going to see some growth. And people thought I was nuts. But now, even at the distributor level, even at the bigger companies, you know, you could pick any of them, Suzuki, Ducati, KTM, Triumph, even though they've laid off internally, not all of them, but some of them have laid off internally expecting reduction in wholesale sales. They've actually seen an increase in wholesale sales and retail is having some of the best months they've ever had. Yeah. But what that tells me in relationship to like what you had just said with your business is what does that look like 3, 6, 9, 12 months from now when these businesses had an increase in retail, but now have to service the product on the back end.
Exactly.
You know, if they don't prepare their fixed operations or their service staff properly, they won't be able to meet customer expectations.
Boom.
And from a corporate standpoint, you took a bunch of people, sent them home with a laptop, and expected them to be remote employees using your corporate mission with a light switch. Mm-hmm. And a lot of these companies, I don't think, were prepared for that kind of culture shift.
No, they weren't. And now, like you said, it's going to really filter folks that didn't actually have a talent strategy.
Yeah.
And now it's going to, and so people are going to say, you didn't develop me during this. Why are you trying to develop me after this? Yeah. And so what's going to happen is once things start opening back up, people are going to begin to connect to that value that you talked about with those youth, because that's what this generation is coming up. They're connecting to where they feel seen, heard and valued.
Yeah. Well, I might be putting the cart before the horse, and I don't want to put words in your mouth, Lawrence, yeah. but I think the both of us over the next 3 to 6 months, there might be a gap or a lull getting there.
Yep.
But I think once that happens and people in charge start to realize, like, oh, crud, we don't have our staff prepared for this. Yep. I think there's going to be an uptick in what you and I do.
Definitely.
You know, and this isn't a matter of, and for other coaches and leadership coaches and speakers and stuff out there, this isn't a, hey, we're going to take a piece of your pie. This is, man, we need to bake some more pie. And we need to bake a lot of pie, because I think there's going to be a big drought, a big need for this kind of training.
For sure. It's not competition. It's all about collaboration. We need each other, because again, these contracts are going to be huge. The opportunity is going to be huge. And I always tell people, I listen for your capability, because I'm not trying to be the end all be all for everybody. I'm not going to be everybody's cup of tea. And so I need to be connected with a version of tea that client may drink. And so I that way I can call Kurt. That way when I find some owners of dealerships or whatever it is, guess what? I'm not going to try to walk that dog. I'm going to call Kurt. Like, hey man, I got some folks for you.
I got some folks.
Yeah.
Well, Lawrence, I got to tell you, man, I'm really impressed with our time. Is there anything that we've missed or anything that you need to cover or say?
No, I just, again, thank you for sharing your audience. Thank you for sharing your platform, man. And hey, I can't wait to partner, man.
Nice. Well, folks, if you're watching this on the YouTube or on the website, you know where to go. Go underneath the video and you'll see the links to Lawrence. You'll see a picture of him, so you know who to look for, you know, when you're doing LinkedIn searches. And if you're listening on audio, be sure to check the notes inside Anchor and those channels that get shared with Anchor, because the details to connect with Lawrence will be in the description of that podcast. Folks, this wraps up another episode of the Mañana No Más podcast. I thank you so much. Don't forget to like, share, subscribe, all those social media things that you're supposed to do. You're not doing it. You need to do it. Click those buttons before you hit scroll. All right. I'll talk to you soon. I love y'all. God bless.